Good morning. I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net for my friends abroad at WSOU.net. I'm so proud to have Brian Wisawati, affectionately known as The Wiz, as our in-studio guest today. Brian is what I call the Rupert Murdoch at Seton Hall University, simply because he is the editor and publisher of the Seton Hall University student newspaper, The Centonian, and he is the student manager of WSOU 89.5 FM. My boss, Brian, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Darrell. A pleasure to be here. And for me, it's very intriguing because I normally am on the other side. I press the buttons on the weekends at times as an engineer. So it's kind of cool to be the guest on the show that maybe I'll be pressing the button for to play on a Saturday morning.
Well, as I've had this program for the last year, I've gotten to know you over the last 15 months. And I've seen you rise from being the person in charge of the sports desk. Mm-hmm. And now you're really running the entire station. For our audience, share with us a little bit about your background and your experience.
Sure, I'd be delighted to. Well, I started here in 2007. That's my freshman year. That would make me a fourth-year senior here at Seton Hall. Began right away to work my way up at WSOU, and you mentioned the paper as well, The Setonian. Very fortunate just to meet some great people along the way and work hard. And by my sophomore year, I was assistant sports director here. I held pretty much the equivalent role at the paper as assistant sports editor. And by my junior year, which was last year, you mentioned I was sports director here. And at the newspaper, began to move up in the greater hierarchy of things. I was managing editor, and that kind of paved the way to the editor-in-chief role that I hold now with the paper. And I think that when I took over the sports department last year at WSOU, I kind of stopped and said, well, that was my goal when I came to Seton Hall. I came here to work at this very radio station. You know, I'm a Jersey guy. I used to listen to the Pirates and our sports coverage. So that was kind of the ultimate goal. And I said, well, you know, I've achieved this my junior year. I still have a year left. I'm not going to go hang around or just goof off or senioritis, anything like that. I had to find something to do. And so the station manager role kind of came into, you know, to a vision of mine. And I said, this is what I want to strive for. And, you know, things kind of worked out very well for me. And I'm very fortunate to be here and be in charge of both at the same time. It's really a great
privilege.
That's
awesome. You know, I was a student here at Seton Hall some years ago. It was always, you know, you had the radio station and then you had the Centonian. That's fantastic. I have some more questions for you. But before we dive into those questions, now, what part of New Jersey are you from?
I'm originally from Mattawan. I was born and raised for a number of years in Jersey City before we moved over to suburbia, New Jersey, as I like to call it. So it was kind of cool to come to Seton Hall, a bit of a homecoming back to North Jersey for me. But I've always been in this area. And aside from WSOU, the one other very strong component to keep me here at Seton Hall, keep me home, if you will, in terms of going to college, was I could not leave New York City. I love this area. I love the market, especially for media and something that I'm very passionate about. It's a great opportunity to stay home and work right at home. So always been from Jersey, though. So that's kind of the
now,
background.
In high school, I guess you had a vision for, mm-hmm, as you said, you wanted to come to Seton Hall, particularly for the radio station. What type of activities did you do in high school?
I did the paper, our high school paper, not to to slam it in any way. It wasn't the most professionally run, as I'm sure a lot of high school papers are. I went to a pretty large high school, so I was kind of surprised that it was a bit of a simpler operation than it really was, you know, something that I expected it to be. But I guess it kind of just resonated with me. I had a passion for sports. I always kind of felt myself, it seems kind of silly, but I'd watch a game on TV or I'd be even playing, let's say, like a video game or something, and I could hear in my head, like, I'd be broadcasting the game. You know, I'd hear, well, what would I say or what my insight would be? Or even just with friends. You know, you sit with a friend and watch a game and say, oh, man, that was a terrible call. That ball was clearly outside. But it was a step further than just, you know, kind of hanging around with the guys and making comments. And so it always just kind of dawned on me that maybe it should be sports broadcasting, sports reporting. And I kind of dabbled in that a little bit more in the print edition in high school. It's mostly when I got here that I started moving up quickly because I was around it. I experienced it. I met colleagues here. Even as a freshman, I said, you know what? I can be doing that in a couple of years. I can be broadcasting, you know, the Pirates men's team playing in the Big East tournament or playing, you know, in that really big Big East game. So it was kind of neat to me. But I think a lot of it really started when I got here. That was a big kind of launching point for me.
Now, you know, running the radio station and running the newspaper, that's two time-consuming activities. Mm-hmm. Do you do anything else on campus?
It's definitely a tough schedule to manage at times. Mostly right now for this fall semester here in 2010, my other obstacle is my internship. I intern with NBC Nightly News. I'm there 3 times a week. It's pretty long hours. It's a 10 to 7 commitment those days, so it's a bit tough.
10 at night to 7 in the morning.
No, it's 10 in the morning. Ten in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
It's a pretty long day, and the BlackBerry helps me keep track of what's going on campus at times with the emails and the text messages that I can get. But outside of that, you know, it's a definite time constraint to do other activities and clubs. I was recently named as a charter member of Omicron Delta Kappa. I hope I said it right. It's a leadership fraternity. Mm-hmm. We're starting here at Seton Hall.
Oh, very nice.
So
very
that's
nice.
That's coming up down
when you,
the pipe.
When you use the word leadership, you know my ears perk up.
Yeah, it was something that I was asked to become a charter member for, and we're looking to get the fraternity rolling and really start it up in the spring. So for now, I mean, it's really maximizing my time, and you know, outside of that, I mean, I do go to class and try to get good grades and right. those sorts of things as well.
You know, as the editor of the Centonian, share with us what your editorial focus is and what do you try to achieve on a week. It's a weekly, correct?
Yes. Well, I think that the first goal for any campus paper, and this could be argued, I guess, by different editors and advisors, is you really have a certain market to cover. I mean, we have this campus. This is our community, and you can kind of expand that past the gates, if you will, into South Orange and into other areas that there's a big Seton Hall, a group of folks, whether it's students living off campus or other events that go on off campus, whatever. But the basic idea to me is that we are a campus news-focused paper. You know, we can go ahead if we wanted to, and we could cover election day. We can cover, you know, races across the country, or we can cover national news. But to me, unless we had the opportunity to do that in person, we really shouldn't be focusing on that. Because my idea is that, you know, journalism at its core is you're going to cover something in person, to meet people in person, to be there, to be that eyewitness. And if you can't really do that, it shouldn't really take a focus in your paper. So that's why, you know, if the president makes some, you know, landmark legislation, well, if we can speak to him on a conference call for student media, that's great. That's going in the paper. If it's something where we're watching CNN and we see it, well, that's not really journalism. That's kind of just, you know, rewriting what other people are doing. So a lot of our focus is on campus. Sports is a bit different because we're, aside from basketball, the one hub for Seton Hall sports information. And entertainment's where we get a little more flexible. You know, we kind of just branch out and do some album reviews because I think that, you know, some folks on this campus like to see what one of their peers may think about this album or this movie or this play. But, you know, mostly on the news end, it's keeping an eye on what goes on here and pertaining directly to the Seton Hall community.
Excellent. And what are your goals for the radio station for this year?
My first goal, and this was something we addressed when I took over back in May as station manager, was to increase the profile of WSOU with Seton Hall. I encountered, since I started here my freshman year again back in 2007, a bit of a disconnect. Part of it, stereotypically, I guess, is because of the genre. I mean, we play some hard rock and some metal, and a lot of people kind of chuckle and saying that's the genre of a Catholic university's radio station. It's kind of unique. So I think that there's a bit of disconnect there. I think there's a kind of predisposition to what metal is and what hard rock is. But to me, I mean, we have won awards. We have a very talented and dedicated staff. We operate 24/7, 365. Live bodies in the seats, as I like to call them. There's no automation, no folks take off for winter break, and we, you know, press a button for 6 weeks and take off. So to me, it's an area that really should be showcased because it got me here. It got me to Seton Hall University. So I'm working to do some community service activities. We recently did a drive to send CDs to the troops overseas. We've been very active in University Day and open house events. And again, trying to be a bit of an ambassador both for Seton Hall, but having it go both ways, having the university kind of appreciate us. And to me, when I see things like, I know recently the university sent out its latest capital campaign, I guess, appeals, like a blue book. And it was like in this form of a quiz thing, you know, just to kind of educate people about the finances of Seton Hall and donations and that sort of thing. And the first question pertains to WSOU and how many great broadcasters and journalists and DJs and whatever else we've launched from this place right here. That to me shows that the university is saying, you know, WSOU is here. It's something we should showcase. It's something we should cherish and really appreciate the students that put in the work as well. So that's my first goal. And I think other than that, it's basic stuff, hard work, you know, improving what we can do on a daily basis, thinking outside the box and really for everybody here, especially on my management team, the student managers, leaving this place better off than it was when you got here. That's got to be the goal, to come back in 10, 15 years and say, hey, I did that, and it's still being done today. That, to me, is pretty cool.
That's great. That is awesome. Recently, I submitted an application to South Orange to be on the South Orange Seton Hall Liaison Committee because I feel that there is a disconnect. Despite all the great efforts that people are making, I still think there's a bit of a disconnect of bringing the two communities together. And sitting here talking with you, it seems that there's an opportunity there for Seton Hall WSOU to do something with South Orange for different events that South Orange might have where it will make the community more aware of WSOU and vice versa. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, it's one of those situations, just like it is between the university and the radio station, in which it can be, you know, mutually beneficial. I mean, if both parties can walk away, you know, we can get more listeners, more exposure. You know, Seton Hall can get their name out a little bit more and showcase it for folks coming in. If it's the Village of South Orange, they can go ahead and really kind of tout that they are the home of this award-winning college radio station. You're right. I mean, I think it's a great idea, and it takes that thinking. It's somewhat outside-the-box thinking, and I'm a big believer in that, and that you can't walk into a place and just, you know, go with what the flow is or go with the conventional thought. Think outside and do something very different, and something like that would be a great example. There is definitely a disconnect. You know, I've lived in this village now for a couple of years. I moved into an apartment back in July of 2009. Unlike many of my peers, maybe, where they go home for the summer, I've raised the money or saved the money to stay here and to be in the community. And I try to, you know, have an idea what's going on in South Orange because this is my home now. And you're right. I think it's a great opportunity where you have something that's kind of established like WSOU to kind of bridge that gap a little bit between the school and the town that it resides in.
Right, right. Do you happen to have a shared vision? I mean, as you are really managing two media properties, as I call you, the Rupert Murdoch of Seton Hall, do you have a shared vision and or plan of action that you have for both the print and the radio station?
There's definitely some overlap. I try my best at times to keep them independent to an extent because there is crossover in terms of folks that I work with, but a lot of the folks I really work with, the higher-ups here would be more of the programming department. Maybe at the paper it's my executive team, folks that, you know, work on the business affairs side or the real last-second editorial calls. They're not necessarily overly working together or, you know, overly kind of cross-pollinating with the two outlets. But to me, the idea is that it's deadline-driven. It's more of a philosophy, I would say. It's deadline-driven. It's working hard. It's being honest and transparent in what you're doing. It's going out again and just trying to do something differently. You know, I kind of came into both in, I guess, around the period of May or June when I really started working towards what would be the start of this fall semester and said, we have to go ahead and think, you know, unconventionally. How can we make the paper better? You know, the best example I have there was we used to do our production night, which is on Wednesdays. We used to work with the, you know, checking the pages and looking at stories and laying out the proofs. And this process would just take so long. We'd start at 6 p.m. and we normally wouldn't finish until maybe 4 or 5 in the morning on Thursday. A little painful if you have a 10 a.m. class. The Seton Hall has a lot of them on Thursdays for students. So I said, you know, we're going to start working during the week and we'll be, you know, setting deadlines during the week. Editors will be required to submit pages in brief, and, you know, that way we can just move forward. And now we get done usually around midnight, 1 a.m. at the latest. If we get 1 a.m., people are groaning, oh, man, we're here late. I said, man, you should have been around last year. It's nothing. And at the radio station, it's kind of the same thing. We have this big event coming up. You know, I want to know what's going on. Let's have updates. Let's do things by email where we can coordinate with one another, even though we have such different schedules. So I think overall it's the philosophy behind both. It's just, you know, following up, being consistent, being responsible, and again, being honest. I've told people, yeah, I can be a bit hard at times and kind of nudge people and make sure I'm staying on top of them. But you know what? If a page is not done by deadline and we have some time, I'm not going to go crazy. I'm not going to yell and scream. So just keep me updated. If I know what's going on, I can survive. I can live with that. The same here at the station. If something happens where a DJ no shows and it's this giant panic or whatever, I might be a little upset if I find out 2 days later and we're trying to act on it and, you know, penalize this individual. But if it's something where someone tells me and they keep me in the loop, I'm happy. And then we come up with a calm plan of action and we move forward. I mean, that's what leadership is all about in my mind.
Well, you know, it leads me right to my next question, and I've watched you grow into this role over the last year. Describe for us your leadership style. You gave us some insights into your style, but you're not going to be like the Paladino guy who was running for governor saying he's going to take somebody out. But
yes, no baseball bats to
Albany. No baseball bats, exactly.
Well, I think that it's a bit of a fusion, my leadership style, between some stuff I've learned from my folks, obviously. My father with a great work ethic. My mother with this, you know, just be honest and don't necessarily try to pull punches, because if you do, or you're trying to be, you know, maybe somewhat deceptive, you're going to get caught at the end. I mean, it's just not a good way to go about doing it, or, you know, trying to take on too much on your own. That's another thing, too. I've learned that delegation is very important, too. It's something I think that a lot of college students, a lot of my peers, I'll say, have a bit of a hard time doing. You know, they feel that they've earned this role and that it's always on them to get the job done. To me, I can't do that. I mean, I learned the hard way. When you're managing both the paper and the station, and you're going to class, and, you know, you have NBC on your plate, and maybe trying to have a social life, and, you know, I have to spend some time with the girlfriend unless she gets a little upset. So it's a lot of delegation. It's just, you know, letting people know what I expect to be done. And then it's kind of, you know, stepping back and also saying, you know what? Yeah, I may have done it differently, but at the end of the day, this person handled it. I'm not going to take a sledgehammer to it and do it all over on my own, because I'll go crazy and then they'll be upset. I mean, that's just not a good message to send. So it's, you know, some of the basics, of course, hard work and, you know, putting in the time you need to, not rushing through projects. But I think delegation has been the one area that has really, really become a central focus in my leadership style. I had one of my advisors tell me not too long ago about the newspaper, said, you know, you're doing a remarkable job at times, you know, managing without necessarily doing the work. And, you know, I kind of stopped for a minute, because you hear that saying, oh man, they don't think I'm doing the work. And she says, no, she goes, it doesn't sound right, but you know what? That's what a good manager does. And necessarily, they go out there and they are making sure the product is done, and just kind of keeping an eye on the grand scheme of things. So that's been a lot of what my goal is. There's so many updates that I get during the week, you know, by email, by text message, by bumping into people on the campus saying, hey, I was going to tell you this by email, but I see you now, let me tell you this. And it's a very important way, I think, to keep on track and keep both operations going.
You know, I have to say, Brian, I am just more impressed with you, the maturity that you show and displayed. And recently, we had a tragedy here at Seton Hall. And you wrote a note to the community in regards to how you wanted to be respectful here at the radio station in regards to that tragedy. And I sent you a note, and I just said, wow, this is really a great thing that you've done for people. In your opinion, what motivated you to write that note? Because a lot of leaders wouldn't have done it, not because they didn't want to do it, but they just wouldn't have thought about it.
It's an interesting story about that scenario, that situation, the tragic death of the Seton Hall student. I guess to kind of backtrack, and I've actually never even told this to anybody yet, you know, that was a story in which, for the paper, we actually broke. We were the first there, because when everything happened, the long version made short is that I had tips around campus telling me, and I'd come home from an event in New York City. I was at a concert and, you know, went to the scene at around, I guess it was like 2 a.m. that Friday.
Wow.
So I was there on the front lines, if you will, after it had happened and the police cars were circulating and the caution tape or the police tape was getting dragged out. So, you know, that was a whirlwind of a weekend for me, because not only did we break it and I had news outlets around the country contacting us and asking for information, but we followed through with it as that Saturday rolled along. And you know, Jessica Moore passed away, and the prayer service was held on campus, and just the different steps of it. And so I came to work that Sunday morning, again, as I mentioned, my engineering role here on campus, between 6 a.m. and noon on Sunday. And this, again, is the day after, you know, 2 days after the shooting technically, but really the day after the real whirlwind. And I stopped and said, you know what, I've had no time to react to this as a student. I'm thinking the journalistic perspective. You know, if I'm getting tips, it's not, oh my gosh, this happened to a colleague or a peer of mine. It's more of, well, who can we verify it with? Or who said this? Are they a trustworthy source? So I kind of pulled back for a moment and said, you know, let me think about the average staff member on my team and how they're reacting to this. And my theory was that as a journalist, it was a whirlwind for a student, especially someone who may know her, who may have thought about going to that party off campus, who maybe take part in those sorts of events that are off campus, maybe in the not so nice areas around the campus. They must be just also in a whirlwind, you know, even more so. And I figured that as a leader, this is the time to step up and give them some direction in terms of, so they know what we're doing here at WSOU. And yeah, that night I did the same thing as well at the paper. I called together my editorial board, and, you know, we planned our coverage for that week. We had a special edition of the paper, as I'm sure you can imagine, about the
which I saw. It was very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice collage of pictures of her.
Yeah, and it was more of just also kind of looking at them straight in the eye and saying, folks, if we need to talk about this, because as journalists we're not reacting as students, if we're getting affected, let's do it. I mean, I'm here to bounce those ideas off of and be that ear as well, because that's another part of leadership. So I think it was just trying to provide some guidance, some solace, and you know, when it comes from the top down, I think it can be effective that way.
And how are the students coping with this tragedy of the loss of Jessica Moore?
It's been tough. I think that mm-hmm. you know, time heals all wounds, as they say, that some normalcy has returned about the safety and the different you know, elements behind this that were kind of brought about, whether it's, you know, violence off the campus, if it's, you know, are we, you know, able to safely go out and be walking back at night, if it's, you know, communication about something like this happening, the different elements of it. But I think that the leadership on the campus has been very strong. I think that our interim president, you know, Dr. Esteban, has done a great job in terms of having moments where the university is acknowledging what happened and moving forward from it and working to keep the students in the loop and speaking to parents about it. They did that on University Day. They had, I believe, a Q&A session about campus safety, which was something that kind of struck me, saying, wow, you know, Seton Hall could have very easily said, hey, this is University Day. Our alumni are here. Our donors, let's just not talk about this. And they didn't do that. They addressed it and said, you know, we're here to listen to your concerns and to give honest feedback. But I think it's been a tough process at times. I think that there's still a bit of a fear when all those campus alerts get emailed to us as students saying, you know, a mugging has occurred or, you know, something has happened off campus that, you know, may be a threat to your safety if you're out late at night. Halloween recently passed, and there was a big letter that we ran in the Setonian from the vice president, Dr. Laura Wankel, about campus safety and what to do if you're off campus late at night, and especially if you're out partying and there's somebody that you're with whose judgment may be impaired. I mean, these sorts of things. So It's tough to stomach at times. I think it's the long-term impact of this will be that the safety around the campus will continue to be prodded in terms of how safe is it to be here, to live off campus, to walk off campus at night. But overall, I think on campus things have just kind of come back to normal because, you know, a couple of weeks passed by and midterms came about again and classes keep firing up. And that's just the life of being a college student. It continues to move along at a rapid pace. But people don't forget. People still know.
As a student, what are the key issues? And as a student and also editor of the newspaper, as well as the manager of this radio station, what are the three key issues that you would like to see the administration of Seton Hall address?
Key issues. I would say number one, it has to be the money. I mean, it sounds simplistic, but it costs a lot of money to go to this school. And I love Seton Hall dearly. And I would hate to see other students, whether it's they're between maybe sophomore and junior year, and have to make that decision if they need to go home because they can't, you know, live on campus, or maybe they need to withdraw because they can't afford to keep going here. It's tough. I mean, the money situation is a very difficult one, I think, to manage. The other one, I think, is constantly prodding the core curriculum. I think it's an area in which a lot of students kind of begrudgingly push through but don't necessarily think too much about. Just kind of seeing what students necessarily want to learn in that core and to get the most out of it if you want to have that liberal arts background moving forward. And then third, I mean, it's the obvious. It's the safety. I mean, the safety is very big for students that want to live off campus. You know, can they live a couple of blocks away? And if they're on campus late at night, walk home? Can they, you know, find a way to safely get around campus, you know, even late at night, you know, in the near vicinity if they're going and they don't want to walk? Will the university step up and offer them? And they started to do so in terms of, you know, vans that can bring people around and different outlets like that. So, you know, recognizing what it is now, what the goal is to be for the safety, and bridging the gap in between where you're kind of in that transition period. And it's not going to be easy. That one is probably the toughest. You know, curriculum and money you can work with. Safety is very, very difficult.
Well, as a member of the University Advisory Council, I will be sure to raise these three issues at our next meeting, which is coming up the second week of November. Princeton has an endowment that really provides scholarships for folks who want to attend Princeton. And one of the challenges that we have is getting alumni that don't participate to participate. And recently there was a study that they completed, a marketing study, which was quite interesting. Probably would be helpful to have the gentleman from that a part of the university to come on the program to talk about that.
Sure.
So we can educate our audience in regards to here's how people can help to address that problem of the financing of the everyone's education, because it is expensive.
It's very expensive. And, you know, with the world we live in, A lot of folks are in debt, and it's not easy if you come from a, you know, a humble background, and if you have a situation where you're denied federal work study eligibility so you can kind of defray some costs. I mean, it's a lot more than just paying for books and classes. It's thinking, you know, you need pocket money to eat or to maybe go out during the weekend and, right. and have a good time. And, right. and it's a strain. I mean, even on me, it's a strain here as a senior. The fiscal end of things.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we can work together on that over the course of the next year.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Absolutely. And in regards to the state of New Jersey, what issues would you like to see the governor address?
It's intriguing, you know, as a lifelong resident of New Jersey, I take this stuff very, very seriously, the politics, and I understand the need to balance the budget. I'm not a particular fan of the decision to kind of put a halt to the tunnel project, the ARC project as it be, because I think that the New Jersey Transit trains can probably use some extra help in terms of getting in and out of New York City. But I think it's for the governor, for the administration to do what I think this country needs to do to an extent, and that is kind of back away from the divide between Democrats and Republicans, this anger that you see all over the place. I mean, I understand the governor has, you know, his goals in mind, his agenda to push. He says oftentimes that, you know, he's the one that has to balance the budget. Folks don't understand that. But for, you know, comments to be leaked out that it almost looks like he's picking a fight, to me that's a bit discouraging at any level. And it's not just him. It goes, again, around the country. It's like that. So for New Jersey, hey, set the standard. I mean, kind of, you know, back off, work together, and start to eliminate the conflict where people say, oh, it's just Jersey politics. No, just keep things, you know, a bit more calm and work towards solutions. Find a way to balance that budget, but to also have projects that can increase jobs, projects that can increase, you know, commuters, like I said with the ARC, you know, getting in and out of New York City, things that will benefit people as you balance this budget. And it may take a little bit longer than expected, but to me, like anything, if folks are saying spend and other folks are saying put the brakes on it, the medium has to be what may be the practical solution for New Jersey.
Well, you know, it's interesting. On HBO, there's a series called Boardwalk Empires. Mm-hmm. And Martin Scorsese, of course, produced this. He tried to produce this in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And because of New Jersey's red tape, they took the show to Brooklyn. Mm. Just think about all those jobs that folks would have had to build those sets. And, of course, I'm an Atlantic City resident, so I can't understand why Atlantic City didn't say, we have a lot of land for you to use for free because it's vacant and it's the beach is there. So we have our work cut out here in New Jersey to really do some very practical things that make sense.
I think so, too. I think it's just kind of, again, finding the happy medium, because I understand the budget situation's dire. I understand that, you know, there's some folks saying just kind of keep spending when, yeah, you might have to back off a little bit. But you're right. You know, being open to ideas like that, again, that idea of thinking outside the box.
Well, you know, It's very practical things like infrastructure. Quite frankly, if you had a hole in the roof of your home and you didn't have the money to pay for it, you would find the money to get that leak repaired.
Yeah.
And when you think about our road, our bridges, our roads, our tunnels, we want to make sure that infrastructure is going to be safe. But then you look at the productivity of the country. Here you have China and Japan. They got the high-speed train lines in Europe, and we're still moving at, as someone said, I heard this morning, at 60 miles an hour. It's going a little bit faster than that. But, you know, when you can move people and move goods, and you create commerce, you create opportunities, and it seemed like we've gotten off track from that.
I would say so. Kind of having that, you know, this is America idea. We're going to set the standard, and you're right. I think that's a good place to start, infrastructure.
So what are the young folks talking about? I mean, you got your pulse on the young folks. What are the things that they're disappointed about the way that the folks of my generation are handling things?
You know, I think it's breaking away from the conventional thinking. You know, we live in an age where even my generation has seen evolutions from, I guess, like the Walkman to the iPod. You know, we've seen evolutions from, you know, AOL dial-up to high speed with Facebook and Twitter.
Right.
And within that vein, I think it's more of just having older generations and right now the folks that are in charge break away from their conventional thinking and kind of open up a little bit. And I think that's, you know, a great example is why, you know, Mr. President right now, Barack Obama, you know, really reached out to the young folks and still can because he's doing things like social networking. I know like the White House is tweeting and these kind of things. I think that's where a lot of folks, it's hard to tell because there's a good amount of apathy, but for a number of them, it's just seeing and visualizing the older generation kind of embracing that new, because just like in the world of newspapers and one of my fields, it's going to change whether you like it or not. If you want to stand by and hold on to a print paper, that's fine. But eventually the day is going to come where you run out of money and you're going to have to make sure you know these different areas in the web and the capabilities that it has.
Now let's switch to another subject that is very dear to you and I. We're Mets fans.
We are.
So who's going to be the next Mets manager?
That's a great question. I personally am going to begin campaigning for Clint Hurdle. You know, he's currently the Rangers, Texas Rangers hitting coach. He was the manager of the Rockies when they went from last or worst to first, as they say, and brought them to the World Series in, I believe, 2007 when they dropped it to the Red Sox. I think he is the right guy. It should be someone low-key, someone that can just work with the team right now on the field, and most importantly, you know, not ruffle the feathers of the new general manager. This is Sandy Alderson's team. I'm buying into it. He's going to turn around the franchise. I'm expecting to go to a playoff game within the near future. But the bottom line is, he has to be the focus. You don't necessarily want to have a manager to overshadow your new GM who has a clear vision to turn around this franchise. I'm excited, though. I think it's going to be a good hire.
And, Brian, as we have to close, but real quick, what are your plans for the future?
Finding a job is number one. But it would be something in media. Right now it's leaning more towards the broadcasting end. Whether it's TV or radio, I don't know. To me, print's kind of dying. And I can kind of see myself broadcasting and then doing some written work on the side, whether it's a blog. I run a bit of a blog now on some of my thoughts about campus issues, whether it's a book or something in the future. But I think right now, broadcasting, it's fun. I love DJing.